Are your Facebook friends comparing Donald Trump to Benito Mussolini? That's happening on Knute Berger's page, too. And that got the Seattle writer thinking about the history of fascism in the United States and even in Seattle. And what Berger found is remarkable. He told David Hyde about a fascist group that arose here in the 1930s called the Silver Shirts, and how Washington became the only state to put a fascist presidential candidate on the ballot.
In 1936, the head of the Silver Shirts, a man named William Dudley Pelley, who was kind of a New Age Christian fascist. I joke that he was sort of the Jay-Z Knight of American fascism, decided he was going to run for president. He had a prophecy. He said he had talked to God. God wanted him to be president. He founded a party called the Christian Party, which is essentially the Silver Shirt Party. And he could only get on the ballot in one state, and it happened to be Washington State.
Why?
Washington had a fairly easy terms to get on the ballot. And that was a time in Washington, if you go back in those mid-1930s, there was kind of political tumult here. Parties were splitting. The ballot from 1936, there were Republicans and Democrats. Roosevelt was running for reelection. But there were also multiple socialist parties, a communist party. There were several right-wing parties, including the Christian Party. The Silver Shirts found a lot of support in the Midwest and the West Coast. There are a lot of theories about why that might be. But he found strong support here. So he actually moved out to Seattle, ran the campaign from here, and found some of his most ardent, permanent supporters here in that campaign.
What was he saying? What was the message that would have resonated with at least some people, some Washingtonians, some Seattleites in 1936?
Largely an anti-government, anti-Roosevelt, anti-New Deal package. These people were taking away our rights. Anti-immigration. They wanted to keep Jews out of the United States. It was virulently anti-Semitic. And, you know, a lot of the language is the language you hear now about, you know, kind of build a wall and keep them out. It was a very nativist orientation. They wanted to create a Christian commonwealth. They saw themselves as revolutionaries like the Minutemen. They constantly compared themselves. The acts of violence that they committed were not extreme. They definitely promoted people arming themselves for this kind of ultimate Armageddon they thought was happening. They thought a biblical battle was about to take place, and they wanted to be in that Christian army.
So the year is 1936. How successful was the Christian Party here in Washington and, I guess, around the country?
Yeah, well, nationally, of course, they weren't on any ballots. Here, I think they got a little over 1,500 votes. So it was not very successful. The Communist Party did better than the Christian Party.
The Communist Party was fairly big back then, though, right?
It was, and some of the people who joined the Silver Shirts actually came out of the Wobblies or came out of some of the early labor movement, which had been both, you know, socialist and racially exclusionary. But they were often people who were simply did not like traditional parties, did not like traditional politics. Almost everybody involved with the Silver Shirts had been involved in some kind of fringe party previously. So it attracted people who were feeling on the outs. The people who joined were middle class, white, and they didn't just live in rural areas. I mean, there's kind of a misconception that, oh, this is kind of a bunch of dumb hicks type of thing. These were businessmen. They were the Kiwanis Club types. A major part of their support was Seattle, Pierce County, Snohomish County, and they also had support in Spokane and Yakima. And there was a school principal who actually ran for superintendent of public instruction on the Christian Party ticket. She and her husband had a lodge in Redmond called the Silver Lodge that became their unofficial headquarters in the state. And I thought that was really interesting. They're school teachers, doctors, lawyers. These were not, you know, the poorest of the poor kind of rural folk.
What happened?
Well, what happened was the party continued to grow. William Dudley Pelley was, published many things. But as World War II got closer, his ties with Hitler became more suspect. The government began investigating him. He went before a number of congressional committees. And it all really fell apart after Pearl Harbor. And once the United States was at war with Hitler, the some of the Silver Shirts were actually arrested. William Dudley Pelley, because of his correspondence and ties with actual Nazis, went to prison for sedition. So he spent the war in jail. And they also cleared a lot of the Silver Shirts out of the West Coast under the same law that interned the Japanese. They rounded up some of the leaders of the Silver Shirts and shipped them to the Midwest.
So what does this story about Washington and Seattle's kind of brief flirtation with fascism tell you about the identity of this city and the identity of Washington State?
I think it was a catalyst for a lot of anti-government feeling. And so I find it fascinating because, you know, you think of Seattle today and you don't think of people goose-stepping around, certainly not overtly. And a lot of the kind of white supremacist thought, you might find it on the internet, but you're not necessarily going to find it in the streets here. And I just think it's a really interesting time to sort of reflect on what were the political conditions that saw them come into being, and how have those ideologies morphed? But yet, you know, you can go down to Malheur, and not that those guys are fascists, but you will hear a lot of the same kind of rhetoric.
One thing that strikes me as a relative newcomer to Washington State is how this is a state that has a legacy of centrist congressional representatives, including people like Scoop Jackson. But it also seems to have these people on the radical fringes, whether it's the left, you mentioned the Wobblies, or the right in this case. How does all of that happen here? Why?
I think one reason is that the Pacific North, the West Coast, really didn't have a lot of entrenched political rules. The parties weren't as entrenched or as strong as they were back east, certainly in the 1930s and at times since, with populist reforms. It made it easy to form a party, made it easy to get access to the ballot. And you had people, I think, of independent spirit who moved here for various reasons who didn't feel locked into tradition. So we, you know, let's make our own party. And so at various times in our past, you've seen a kind of blossoming, fracturing tumult as people have tried to reinvent American politics. And this was certainly part of that time period.
So the same political culture that makes us so far outside the beltway that we're willing to experiment with everything from the minimum wage to same-sex marriage to legalizing recreational marijuana also makes it possible for these kind of right-wing kooks to emerge.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and we have a fairly high tolerance for the fringe.
That's writer Knute Berger, the Mossback at Crosscut.com, talking about Seattle's homegrown fascist movement that peaked here in the late 30s. He talked with KUOW's David Hyatt.